Welcome to RFN episode 272. I am your temporary host, James Jones. With me today is Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy.
And standing in for Johnny, who is out on personal reasons, and John, who is out because he just hates the show, is Michael T.Y.P. Cole.
Save it for the show!
And the site's founder, Billy Berghammer.
Hello, and happy holidays to everybody. Isn't Lindemann just finishing up all the reviews that he didn't finish for like the last couple of years?
He actually did get Spiderwick Chronicles out pretty much a year after the movie came out on DVD.
Oh, that's timeliness is important.
So picking up from last week where Greg, Johnny, and I did our games of the year, we wanted to give our guests the opportunity to reflect on what their, you know, handful of games of the year that they thought were really sublime. So I'll start with Billy. What games of the year, or what were the games that really stood out for you this year?
Wow. I mean, this was obviously an absolutely amazing year for gaming again. You know, my actual game of the year, there were two games that kind of really resonated with me. I thought Zelda would probably take it over, but Zelda actually was my second favorite game of the year. I absolutely adored that game. I thought it was fantastic. You know, I did have some issues with some of the controls, but I really liked the way the series finally advanced, and it hasn't advanced in a really long time, and I loved it, but Portal 2 was definitely my game of the year. I've played through it twice, once on PC, once on 360, and the co-op, playing with one of my best friends back in Minnesota, for me, was just absolutely outstanding. So, you know, there's a lot of, due to the fact that I moved a couple weeks ago, a lot of the big holiday releases I haven't been able to finish. So I've barely scratched the surface on Skyrim. That's something I'm looking forward to coming back to playing. I haven't touched Halo Anniversary, which I know it's a remake, but that's a game that I definitely want to finish. But there's a lot of great games. Mario 3D Land, I still haven't, you know, I've barely touched that. I'm looking forward to, over the holiday, getting some more time with that. I would definitely say that the remake of Ocarina of Time, I loved playing through that again. I haven't played it since the original, so that was really fun to go back to. Yeah, and that's why I was actually like, okay, Nintendo, I don't want any more fucking remakes. But you can make that one, and that's cool, because I actually really do want to go back and play that.
Yeah, I've played it too many times. I mean, I got the Master Quest finished on the GameCube disc, nice. And that was kind of buggy.
Yes, it was.
That was still 8 years ago, though.
But the 3D was really good, and it was a good showing of how 3D can be really good on that system, and it's definitely telling when you see Mario 3D Land. I mean, the 3D in that game was just freaking amazing, mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that game was actually the first time I got anything substantive on the 3DS, so it's kind of special in that by default. Because, I mean, the longest game I played before that was Rayman 2, which is a remake of a remake of a remake. So it got on my list, or almost on, simply because it was a substantive and good 3DS experience.
Yeah, but I mean, I still have a pile of games that, as I said, I still need to get to. Actually, one of the games that I absolutely loved this year as well was NHL 12, which I know those games don't come to Wii anymore. But man, I, as a hockey fan, it's just fantastic. I think it's probably the best sports game this year.
So, TYP, what are your choices for your games of the year?
Well, my half-hazardly put together list is
perfect.
Yeah, I got a half-hazard list here. So number five here is Pilot Wings Resort. Because although I didn't play it for too long, I had a lot of fun with it, and it was a really good use of the 3D when it first came out, I thought. Number four is Skyward Sword. I really like the game, but for all the reasons you guys have talked about on this podcast already, it just wasn't quite what I was hoping it would be. I love the controls, with the exception of once or twice with the Skyward Strike. But yeah, I mean, it's a great game. I really like the dungeon designs and the combat. But the backtracking and filling in the middle, padding in the middle, really did bother me. Although I grew to like the Spirit Realm stuff a little bit, overall I thought it was kind of mean-spirited. Because a couple times I died at the very end. Like one time I had gotten all the jewels and then promptly like ran into like a light one of those guys with the lanterns.
Yeah, there is that little bit at the end where you've got everything, but you still have to get back to the start.
Yeah. So I learned my lesson the hard way. And from then on, I planned on having one of those remaining, whatever you call them, seeds or whatever.
Tears of joy.
tears of joy. close to the exit. You know, I learned my lesson, but man, that pissed me off. So I was like, oh, great, I'm done. And then, oh, crap.
Yeah, the water that came out of the ground was incredibly mean-spirited because you could just be like, okay, we don't need to go in.
Number three is Radiant Historia, which, again, you guys have talked about a lot. I've talked about a lot on this show, too. Great game, great music. Number two, Ghost Trick. As you might imagine, I was the individual who lent my copy of Ghost Trick to Johnny. So
made it all possible.
I made it all possible. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Ace Attorney games, so it's no surprise that I enjoyed Ghost Trick as well. And number one is Super Mario 3D Land, as you might imagine. I had reservations like Johnny from E3, and I'm not sure if they tweaked the controls or it was just really difficult to maintain focus at E3, or maybe it's because I didn't have the 3D turned on most of the time. I don't know what it was, but I really couldn't run and jump very well when I played it at E3, and I didn't have that problem at all when I jumped into it at home. And again, you've talked about it already, but it's it really is that sweet spot between like Galaxy and Mario 3. And it's its own unique thing as well.
So I think that wraps up this until Lindemann returns and we can ask him what five games he didn't play this year that he thought would be really awesome.
He's going to say World of Warcraft.
Well, I do want to shout out two things that aren't really eligible.
Okay.
I didn't play a lot of games this year, but I did play a few Virtual Console games. Two in particular that I remember very fondly are Final Fantasy III, which I had never played before.
Yeah.
And Donkey Kong for the Game Boy.
No, it's really, Donkey Kong I had played before, unlike Final Fantasy III, but that is really...
I need to play that.
Oh, you do. It's really, really good.
There really were a lot of really good download games this year. I mean, I'm very curious to see how many years away we are from... not putting them in a different, you know, separate category, like Bastion, you know, I played that for hours, you know, and that was just as much as long as a lot of console games that I played this year, if not longer. I mean, hell, Call of Duty took 5 hours, you know, whatever, to beat. That's one sitting. I mean, Bastion I played for a long time. You know, I heard Pushmo is the same way. It's got some meat on it, too.
Right, so I guess... That'll have to do for now. So I'm actually going to hand the reins of the show over to Greg, and he's going to shepherd us through a collection of emails.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of emails, and Johnny mentioned this last week, and we've received even more in the interim. So for this week's show, from now on, we're just going to focus on getting as many of these covered as we possibly can. Although there's one about the possibility of Retro Studios working on a future Zelda title that, in good conscience, I could not cover in Johnny's absence. So you can wait for a future episode for that topic to be covered, but we've still got plenty of ground to work with here, so I am going to hand off the first letter to TYP.
All right, well, Jim in British Columbia, Canada writes, Nintendo will finally be featuring demos on the 3DS and presumably the Wii U when it launches. I was just wondering what kind of experiences you guys have had with demos. Any instances where it convinced you to either buy or avoid a game? For me, I usually have my mind made up well before I play the demo, so they've had little effect on me, aside from letting me experience a game I was never going to buy. In the instance of trial versions of XBLA games, I've enjoyed several of those I've played, but never felt the need to go beyond the trial. Just my experience thus far. Certainly demos are necessary. Also, how many emails did you receive this week from Sarah from Iowa City?
Depressingly none.
There'll be more on that later. But the demos, of course, 3DS in Japan, they've already started getting them. They've got the Tri-G demo. They've even gone back, actually, for all that. Tri-G demo was up before the game was actually released. But then they've also had demos, things like Dead or Alive Dimensions, that have been out for months. So it seems like they're going to be offering kind of a wide range of demos for the retail release games. But, of course, there is the 30 try limit that we've discussed before.
Now, and entirely unrelated to the fact that they released a demo of Tri-G, it sold about 100 billion copies.
Yeah, it's well, they've already shipped a million to Riverside, I think, and they've already sold most of that, like three quarters of that. So it's going
Thank
well.
Thank you for your predictability, Japan.
It seems to, well, it seems like it's going to quite rapidly outsell its console version.
They did not need to release a demo to entice people to buy that.
I wonder what this game's like. Oh.
Well, but to that question, I mean, for me, there's quite a big separation here between demos of a retail game and demos of a downloadable game. XBLA games, obviously, Jim mentions in his question. But, you know, because downloadable games don't tend to get as much coverage as a retail game, I'm very much more inclined to play demos of those to get a sense of what the game is and whether I would enjoy it and whether it'd be worth buying. So those tend to be the kind of demos I've actually tried. I haven't really got that many demos of retail games that I could say I have tried. So
yeah, I actually, because I was broke for a while, I mean a long time, like since I was a small child, I've been playing demos primarily on PCs because that's where they were, the purveyance of demos were, pretty much my entire life. And for a while, that was my gaming hit, was all I had were demos. So I knew what the first level of like 800 games was like. But beyond that, I was just totally like, I don't know what comes after the first stage of Doom. You tell me. But what I found with the, especially with the Xbox, which has a tremendous demo service, if you have gold membership, of course, is that all the XBLA games have demos, which means you can pretty much try anything, with the only exception being you might waste a few minutes downloading it. And then when you buy it, you pretty much have it instantly because it pretty much downloads the entire game.
Yeah.
The difference with the disc games is if you get the demo, which a lot of them have demos on the service, you still have to actually engage in a separate transaction to get the game. A good example was Rock of Ages on the XBLA, which I adore. But the only thing I knew about it was the fact that it was on the back of my E3 lanyard like 800 years ago. And then it finally came out, and I got a press release for it. I'm like, well, let's just see what the demo is like. And I was sold on the game halfway through the first stage. And when the menu popped up, do you want to buy this game? I'm hammering on the A button. Just go, yes, I want it. Give it to me now.
Yeah, with downloadable games, it's similar for me. I had there was the Blood Rain Way Forward game, you know, the side-scrolling sort of Castlevania-ish kind of thing of theirs that, you know, it received some reviews, some favourable reviews, and I read some of those, but it's not a huge kind of breadth of reviews that you'd get if you were dealing with a big retail release, or even a modest retail release, probably. So the ability to download, like you said, the whole game, you play some of it. It pretty much, I didn't actually buy it until a little bit after when it was sold at a minor discount. But in the terms of the intent to purchase, I was sold on it in the middle of the demo period. So it certainly has happened in that case.
Right. Steam has a similar setup, except every game, obviously, you can download immediately because it's a download service. There's quite a few games I've downloaded demos for on Steam and have just bought outright as soon as I was done with the demo because I was just engaged. As far as disc-based games, or cart-based games in some cases, since I'm usually buying them, you know, on the second wave, you know, after the game's been out for a little while, it's nice for me to say games that I kind of remember people talking about from a few months ago, and I just go and pull down the demo and say, ah, okay, that's what that game's like. Yeah, I guess that's okay. But for me, it's already been whittled down a bit because I'm sort of riding behind the main wave of people who played the game.
Yeah, so your mind hasn't necessarily been all the way made up. Like
right.
Jim, but you've already kind of funneled it down to a pretty narrow kind of range.
Yeah, I mean, it's prevented me from buying some games, like the Bladestorm demo was utterly hellacious. That game was like $4. I'm like, well, maybe I'll go home and play the demo. And I'm like, oh no, we don't want this game.
Yeah, I kind of agree with both you guys. I think for someone that isn't buying a lot of games or doesn't have as much disposable income, I think it's great because then, hey, they have a ton of shit to play. Granted, not all of them are great, but just like you said, you always had stuff to play.
Right.
I actually find I don't really download retail demos anymore unless it's like a beta or like a multiplayer beta or something like that.
Right.
I know at least I'm seasoned enough, or at least I've been to enough preview events or seen enough that I know what I want, and you know, as far as like retail disc based, but you know, a lot of download games, I'll try it and buy it, and or I'll try it and not buy it. But you know, I think it's great, especially for those games, exactly like you guys said, that don't get a lot of exposure, that you can actually give it a whirl. And definitely, I've spent plenty of Microsoft Space Bucks and PlayStation on PSN after playing a demo and like, oh shit, here we go, bought it.
Yeah, for me, I'm not very scattershot with it. I mean, you know, it'll be something that I've got some sort of interest in again. Like, because you say, for instance, with Blood Rain, you know, it's made by WayForward. I've played plenty of their games, so I've got a pretty good idea. I haven't really got into that point yet of like trying a lot of stuff that seems like a bit more out of my wheelhouse or just even more obscure. You know, I haven't got to that point yet, but I was interested. I mean, particularly with TYP, you know, if we get to the point where you've got 3DS and Wii U, and they both have, you know, demos for the downloadable games, maybe, you know, across the board, like you do with XBLA in the future, possibly, and the retail games, do you think it will change the way you size up a game for purchasing in the future?
I think I'm the only guy who's not really a demo person, because I don't even check out the demos that are posted on Nintendo's services. I've only checked out a few demos, and usually they result in me either buying a game and not liking it, or I get the demo and I'm like, yeah, I'm not really interested in this. So for me, I just sort of ignore demos. I mean, like that PS3 game that Lindy likes, but I don't like. What the hell was it that I bought?
Folklore.
Folklore. Thank you. I got the demo. I liked it enough, so I bought the game at a used Game Shot, and then I promptly didn't like it anymore. And obviously, that's it.
Nice.
There's just been a few experiences like that just sort of soured me on the concept of demos. It's like, I don't know.
I mean, yeah. I've obviously had games where I'm like, yeah, this demo's great, and then got the game home. I'm like, oh, the demo is literally all there is.
Yeah. I don't know. The problem is I play so few games now that, like Billy kind of says, I kind of know the ones I want. And I might I've checked out a few demos, like maybe the one with the ink blobs.
World of Goo.
World of Goo, thank you. So I checked out the demo of that. Everyone was raving about it. I didn't get it. I didn't think it was any fun. And so I just don't give a fuck about demos, and maybe it's because I grew up as a Nintendo guy with no demos at all. You know, I never grew up with having demos.
And all you need is Nintendo Power to tell you what to play. That's
I never
right.
really had Nintendo Power either.
The party press will make sure you know what's good for you.
Actually, didn't Fluidity have a demo? Like, you could play a trial?
I'm pretty sure it got one at some point, yeah.
Johnny was talking about that game, and he's like, oh, download the demo, and then you're going to want it. And sure as shit, you know.
Yep.
I mean, I played it at PAX, but playing the demo, I was like, yeah, this game's pretty rad. And that's actually another game I need to go back to.
Yeah, that's another game that everyone raves about, but I didn't really like that much. I stopped playing it. I didn't like the controls.
Do you just not like games anymore? Is that the main
problem? I like Mario 3D Land. I like Radiant Historia.
Yes, I know. But I mean, I think the main way that it'll affect me will be with the downloadable games in future. You know, I think there's probably a number of WiiWare games and DSiWare games that I have thought about getting, but I think a demo could have pushed me over the edge. But, you know, either there wasn't a demo at that point that I was interested, and then it kind of loses its half-life, you know, in your mind of being interested in it, or things like that. You know, so I think it probably, they have lost a certain amount of my money by not having a comprehensive sort of demo system in place.
I would agree.
Over the life of this system, but I do hope that they're going to get all that sort of thing right. I mean, obviously, that's the thing. At the minute with the 3DS, yes, we're getting these sort of limited retail demos, but that's not really what I'm more interested in.
Right.
At this point, you know, I want those downloadable games kind of across the board. But again, Nintendo still sort of maintains a certain amount of reticence about that. I mean, obviously, that 30 play thing is kind of ridiculous, but at the same time, they think about it enough to put it in there. So you do wonder whether they'd say, you know, every single first party downloadable title, would they make it compulsory to have a demo on those? I'm not so sure. There might be some that they'd rather keep completely under wraps.
I don't know. Isn't it like Yamauchi had a long-standing policy of demos killing the game industry?
Yeah, wow. I think there's definitely some relation to that, I think. But they can't help but be somewhat progressive in this area with the next systems.
I forget which developer told me this, but they said that they sell more copies of a download game if they put a demo out after it's been released.
I can believe that, because I guess you get a certain people who will go through the necessary pain of downloading the demo simply based on word of mouth.
Right.
Yeah, and also you probably get a few people that maybe at launch, they're like, well, I'd kind of like to play this at launch, maybe when it's most topical or, right, you know, that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, if they just have the option of playing the demo, then that's enough for them.
You get kind of a second bump.
I think there's probably is some wisdom with having the demo as a secondary thing. And maybe you could get a few people that'll just sort of tip over the edge early and then maybe mop up some of the potentially interested guys later. Oh, that makes sense commercially.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't bought a single download game except on Wii where I didn't have a choice in the matter on a service without playing its demo, ever.
Well, if you've got the option, it's like, why not?
Mm-hmm.
Right. In games I would have never bought, I'm just buying the demo just to kill time, like NBA Jam, I now own and have logged many hours in, and in many cases gone, why did I buy that? But I bought it, and they got my money, so Afterburner Climax, you're welcome.
To set the record straight, wow. I don't hate games. I feel like I've been a jerk so far on this episode.
I don't think so.
We'll just say you're filling in for Lindemann, then you're good.
Well, if I were filling in for Lindemann, I would have bought lots of games and not played them.
Roughly the same effect, don't worry.
Well, we now move on to the next letter. I've got this one. This is Billy in San Jose, California, not Seattle. Although I'm surprised, as a big Twin Peaks fan like myself, I'm surprised it's taken you this long to get out to the Pacific Northwest, by the way.
It's true. I'm very close to the Black Lodge, so I'm very...
You could just enjoy the strobe effect and running around your house and no discernible sense of direction.
That's what my apartment looks like. It just always have some weird strobe light and some
red
crazy
drapes,
wallpaper.
Black and white, yeah. Floor. Anyway, this other Billy writes... Thanks for sharing my email on RFN270. The response was great, and your reaction to Sarah Miller was perfect. I've been listening to RFN for about 2 years,
bitch.
And sometimes you guys mention episode 103, James Jones, Box Hunter, and I had to go back and listen to it. In 103, James comes out about Sarah, and I thought it was so funny, I felt moved to bring Sarah back into the mix. So the mystery is there solved. As I said, just think about it statistically, it was never a good chance with the size of our listenership, so there it is. Well played, Billy. I appreciate your attention to detail. Anyway, your discussion about Shigeru Miyamoto was very interesting. You guys pointed out that he has been a big influence in the video game industry, and I have seen that in the majority of first-party titles from Nintendo over the past few decades. But what does being director of a video game mean compared to being a supervisor, designer, or producer? Since Miyamoto could be moving smaller projects within Nintendo, could this mean Nintendo would possibly move towards a more next-generation approach to hardware and software development?
I'm not sure what they mean by next generation approach to hardware.
I would assume that means some sort of greater preoccupation with tech supremacy numbers.
Triangle numbers? 800 billion triangles?
Maybe, yeah. It's difficult to be exactly sure what he's meant there, but I certainly think not. I think, as we mentioned when we did the discussion about Miyamoto's non-retirement a couple of weeks ago.
Damn you, Kohler.
Whatever his change in what he's actually doing in terms of developing games, I think his strategic role in terms of guiding how they're going to carve out their place in the market and what general sort of gaming company they're going to be still holds true. So, you know, I don't think you're going to see any kind of a philosophical change, a change of their corporate ethos to like, well, you know, now we're all about being the biggest, baddest thing on the market.
And why would they? Because it made them a lot of money.
Yeah. It seems like he already made this announcement a few years ago. I seem to recall him saying something similar about, I don't want to, you know, be overseeing things as much anymore, I think.
I think he just used the word retirement here, which is you know, a big red flag.
Yeah, and he used it very explicitly. It wasn't
he described running around screaming it, effectively.
Yeah, so you could understand why it's happened, but I know what you mean, Tio. It's not a bolt from the blue by any means, what his remarks here. It might actually be more of an aspiration than reality as well. They probably just keep poking him, like, nah, you got to oversee this, mate, sorry.
Yeah, I think he has been removed, though. You know, obviously, I do think he has some influence, you know, overseeing stuff and guiding it a little bit, but, like, he's not, like, hands-on everyday programming shit. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think
Nintendo's like, all right, we got E3 coming out, let's wheel out the man, and he comes out, and yay, you know, and, like...
He's Kermit the Frog, yay, look at this game!
Yeah, I mean, like, Super Mario Sunshine, it was like, yeah, it's Miyamoto, until the game you know, people didn't like it as much as they were hoping to. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, well, it wasn't really Miyamoto. It was this guy that they threw under the bus. But, you know, I don't understand next-gen development. I mean...
But we'll go back to the, in terms of Miyamoto being removed or this, that, and the other, that sort of ties into the question of, you know, we were talking about when was the last time he directed a game, and it was in the late 90s with Ocarina of Time or the 64DD Paint Studio thing.
Well, we should clarify what being a director means versus like a producer. So if you're directing a game, it's your full-time job. You are working on that game. And you were overseeing the project. You kind of have the artistic lead in a lot of cases. And so you're kind of part program manager, so to speak, and part artist, but you're dedicated to that project and you were seeing it, making decisions day to day. If you're producing it, you're looking at it from afar. You check on it once a week or whatever. And you have meetings with the people that are working on it day to day. And that's what Miyamoto's been doing lately. He's been going to lots of meetings, you know, or a virtual teleconference with Retro Studios on Metroid or checking out what they're doing in Tokyo. He hasn't really been crafting a game, and he hasn't been working hand in hand with a team to develop a game.
I mean, I'm sure these roles are different within different kinds of corporate structures, different cultures of development, probably between, you know, Japanese developers and Western developers. I'm sure they're different. You know, in some cases, a producer, I would imagine, would be strictly sort of logistical in his role. It's just like, let's get this done on time, on budget, and coordinate with the marketing people or whatever, and that's it. Whereas, of course, Miyamoto is a developer. He has that background, so he can reach in and be not necessarily a driver, but certainly like a modifier of the creative process where he sees fit. But yeah, he's not actually fashioning and driving forward the creative vision by himself. That's what you would think of with the director role. And that's therefore is what he has not been doing for the past nearly decade and a half.
And that gets back to what you were discussing last episode about upending the tea table, because he's not involved in a day-to-day basis with some of these projects that are still close to his heart. When he finds out that there's something he really dislikes, like whatever, too much story in Mario, he'll just come in and he'll just...
I think that is a far more likely thing to happen if Miyamoto really were completely removed from overseeing Mario games and Zelda games. I think it'd be far more likely thing to happen the next generation developers. All of a sudden, like, Koizumi just goes insane and gives Mario, like, full dialogue, and it's like a soap opera playing out. Or...
I thought he just walked around and ate mushrooms and played with his dog and cats and ended up in a cave and all this other shit, right? Isn't that what he does?
Occasionally, the captain's a submarine on weekends.
And then he comes into the office and paints every single pixel of every single Nintendo-made game with his magic paintbrush, right? I'm just kidding.
I think we've brought out the distinction there pretty well between director and producer. It gives you a somewhat better idea, perhaps, of exactly... you know, how he's kind of moved further and further away from the trenches, as it were, with the development as time's gone on. But we'll move on now. And the next letter, James, you'll read this one.
Riffo writes, while listening to Greg talk about the idea of a sequel to Super Mario 3D Land where Yoshi would be added, I thought back to Super Mario World, which was basically my first video game. Parenthetically, Riffo notes he was born in 94. I would throw my money at Nintendo to have a new and shinier version of that game with a few additions. Having said that, a very large portion of releases nowadays are remakes, yet they rarely hold up as well as an original or sequential title. Why do you think that is? Also, are there any games you think would be great candidates to be remade for the 3DS or Wii U?
I don't know if it's fair to say a great portion are remakes.
I mean, there's quite a lot. I mean, I don't know about great portion, but more in an absolute sense, there's quite a lot.
A notable portion would probably might be a better way of putting it.
If you look at this year's releases alone, it was a year of sequels. But we are so far along in the console cycle, most of the times, especially in this generation. Well, actually, that's not true, because there's a lot of there's actually new franchises debuting across, you know, multiple platforms now this year and next year. But that being said, most games are sequels. And actually, most of the time, I think he's wrong. Like, I think sequels are generally better than the originals.
No, isn't that what he's saying?
No, he isn't saying either. He's saying that remakes rarely hold up as well as the original.
I think when he says as an original, I think he's meant an original title, like an original game in a series, a new, you know.
A new IP, as it were. Well, to a certain extent, I mean, I'm not sure I entirely agree, but to a certain extent, it depends on how loyal the remake is to the original game. I mean, I've played remakes that are essentially tangentially the same game that they were remade from. Effectively, they're completely different titles. But I've also played remakes that are just straight ports. Like, they don't even get graphical upgrades. They're just hard port one system to another.
Well, and one thing that we've seen quite a lot of recently is, you know, the sort of the HD re-release. You know, the PS3 has been big with putting discs out of that, but then you get the digital version as well. You know, Eco Collection, Splinter Cell Trilogy, Tomb Raider. You know, they put out tons and tons of stuff from the PS2 era, sort of just
Metal Gear.
Sure, the Banjo games.
Yeah.
And Ubisoft did Beyond Good and Evil. They've done a bunch of them.
They did the Prince of Persia ones too, didn't they?
That's right.
No, it's been an awful, awful lot. And then, of course, we had 3DS with Star Fox and Ocarina. And, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean,
sup remix.
It's happening a lot. In terms of how well they hold it, I mean, obviously a lot of it, first of all, depends on the original game.
Right. And a lot of those remakes were remakes of relatively modern games. So they're not having to jump through major redevelopment hoops. It's not like you're remaking a 2D game, it's a 3D game.
I think it also depends on how much development resources are put into it. Like, Beyond Good and Evil was buggy as shit, you know? Like, that didn't work out. I mean, remember playing Majora on the GameCube disc? That had a lot of bugs on it, too. But, like, I've played a lot of HD... You know, I played Eco when that was re-released this year, and I thought it was fantastic, you know? So, I mean, it depends on the team behind who's doing it. Like, Ocarina of Time, as I said, one of my favorite games this year. They put effort into that.
They brought in a third-party company just to make that game.
I mean, with Star Fox as well, Star Fox 64, you bring in Q Games, and they did a really good job because they were actually sort of redesigning the 3D models, in a way that Ocarina wasn't. So they did a very good job of faithfully recreating it, but at the same time, it actually looked much, much better than its original version.
I'm going to play Virtual Johnny here and say that if it's a good remake, they probably should have just created a sequel. If you were going to put that much effort into it, why not create a new game?
But it's a particular kind of effort, isn't it? I mean, there's the kind of making sure that it's very carefully presented. It's technically sound. You clean it up where it needs to be cleaned up, but it's not creative effort. That's not the, if you're doing a sequel, people's expectations change, and therefore they demand that there is a creative effort underway that really brings something new to the table in most cases.
I think you can say to a certain extent these remakes cash in on past memories of the games, like the Final Fantasy remakes we had for DS, where they were ground-up remakes of the game, and primarily the only thing they really kept was the plotline. I mean, they certainly didn't reuse any assets.
Right, and at some point a remake becomes like a reimagining. I mean, like Metroid...
Zero Mission.
Metroid and Metroid Zero are very different games.
Yeah, they're basically not the same game.
Yeah, Resident Evil for GameCube.
There's a lot of different approaches to... I mean, Super Castlevania 4 is kind of a remake of the original Castlevania, but most people wouldn't think of it that way because it's rather different, you know. But so some of it, you get into semantics about what is a remake, what is a reimagining, and all that kind of stuff.
I can go back to a game I just recently reviewed, which was the Ace Combat 3DS game, where it's a remake of the second Ace Combat game, but you'd only know that because they use the same character names. The plot's not even really the same.
So, I mean, I think, you know, with this sort of trend, obviously the reason why you have more of it now is because you have a greater sort of bandwidth in the industry with digital distribution, with the amount of developers you can go to that can do a reliable job of this, that this kind of the space for this kind of re-release is far greater than it used to be.
And also, there's a new audience there. There's a new generation happening all the time.
But at the same time, it has a built-in audience as well. You've got that kind of
nostalgia.
Foundation there, the people that it has the cachet, it has the brand recognition. But then on the other hand, there will be a market that's waiting for it because they were too young when it originally came out, or maybe they owned the other system in the console war or whatever. You know, so you've got those both avenues there. You could see what happens, but I mean, in terms of how they hold up,
it's a case by case basis, obviously.
You know, I think a lot of what makes for a good remake or a good re-release updated port. Is if the original had some problems that would, make it inaccessible today or be put, make it really ugly or had, like Billy said, some bugs.
I know what you mean, that there's some games that have things that could, perhaps could be quite easily remedied.
Right.
Right.
For instance, older games sometimes had some pretty funny, archaic attitudes towards even saving the game, right, or lives or so. You, things that are pretty trivial to change that would actually make it a lot more accessible and fun, you know, for the average sort of punter nowadays. Or, on the other hand, some technical limitations. I mean, for instance, Riffo asks about what I think would be some good candidates for a remake. I mean, something I would always like to see is a remake of the original Star Fox, because it was obviously pushing the Super Nintendo and its little FX chip in the cartridge too far. The frame rate is awful, the graphics are bordered, all this kind of stuff. And yeah, I still think it's a very enjoyable, challenging game in principle, but of course it isn't on Virtual Console. But if it were, I think it'd be tough to swallow. Whereas if you went to a 3DS remake and you said, okay, let's have the frame rate nice and smooth, let's have a 3D effect, you could also clean up the graphics but probably keep that kind of retro style in place. It'd be more like something like Xscape that Q Games did on DSiWare, so it's got a kind of retro cool kind of look to it, but it's attractive. Then I think you've got something where you could actually bring out the merits of the original game much more fully than they're actually in the first place, because it was held back by those technical limitations. And you could probably give more options for like continues and stuff, because it was, you know, it was really stingy with those, as I recall.
Yeah.
So that's a good candidate for me. Something that could easily be kind of, you know, without changing the fundamentals of the game, which ultimately you probably don't want to do that because that's what people really kind of want to see brought back. But you could just make it easy for people to enjoy it in any number of a few ways.
I'd like to see Wave Race on the 3DS or even Wii U, but with online multiplayer.
Yeah, that's another good way, isn't it? I mean, you just like, you know, F-Zero X, pretty it up a little bit online with 30 guys. That would be outrageous fun.
Or really, they could re-release GameCube games on Wii U and just add online play in place of standard multiplayer.
God, well, actually, that's what I've been wishing they would do with Virtual Console, is just when you play two players or whatever of a NES game, really, is it that hard to add fucking netcode? I mean, I'm not a programmer.
Well,
but
they did it. They did it with the Super Street Fighter 2 in Japan.
Yes, they did.
For the Genesis, that actually happened just recently.
In Japan.
In Japan, but apparently it will be coming out to other territories, but this is just very
curious. I find that difficult to believe as we're on day 500 of the Virtual Console strike.
Not quite.
Well, we can talk about remakes and all you want, but I mean, it definitely affects Nintendo gamers quite a lot. I mean, Nintendo's released games on fucking paper, for Christ's sake. I mean, you know, when they did those cards.
Yes,
remember the GBA?
The e-readers.
As somebody who just moved across, you know, a couple states and hauled all of that shit with me.
That's the only piece of bulk I avoided.
I've got all this crap that, I mean, these games that I've got 10 different versions of it.
I think why it's so prone to happen with Nintendo, obviously they have a rich heritage. They have a lot of really great games that they've made in the past to draw upon. They also have that built-in fan base that probably is quite eager to play it again.
Known as suckers like me.
Well, you know, it's like with Ocarina for me. It's like
Capcom.
I would never be motivated to play Ocarina again in front of the telly. You give it to me portably. Not only am I motivated to do it, but I'm going to enjoy it a lot. So there's reasons for it. But the point is, I think with Nintendo is that because they are a platform holder, they've always got that strategic responsibility of like, we need to populate the system and space out releases and all that. And
so you're getting Zelda and Star Fox. Enjoy.
But GBA didn't even have an original Mario game, because they just kept going to the old ones.
No, we ended up with this bizarro numbering system.
So sometimes it's just like, well, our development teams are committed to this, this, and this, but we still need something else to put in there, so let's reach into the vault and pluck that out. So it's something that's going to go on, you know, for a long time with Nintendo. I'm sure we will see a number of remakes on Wii U as well. So it kind of brings us on to the next question in a way, sort of related. So Billy, why don't you take this one?
Okay. Tom in Rochester, New York writes, I was thinking about backwards compatibility with Wii U. What if Nintendo enhanced a select number of Wii titles to take advantage of the new functionality of Wii U? For example, you pop in your Super Mario Galaxy 2 disc, and instead of having to push a button to go into first-person view, you just hold up the Wii U tablet controller and look around the level. I was thinking this could be possible if Nintendo upgrades their ability to patch games. However, I realize that Nintendo may not consider doing something like this because it wouldn't make sense for them financially. Well, there's your answer right there.
Yep.
Number one, it would encourage current Wii owners to play their old games on the new system. And two, Nintendo wouldn't be able to resell the game to you.
Yep.
As they did with new play control versions of GameCube games that were released on Wii. I don't even know if this is possible on a technical level. However, I thought it could give all of those casual Wii owners out there another reason to consider picking up a Wii U, as well as encourage those of us already planning on getting the Wii U to not resell our games. Has something like this been done on other consoles in the past?
Well, kind of.
Yeah, I think he answered his own question by saying it wouldn't make sense for them financially. I mean, Nintendo would have to use bandwidth and resources to make you want to go back and play old games. No, Nintendo wants you to buy new shit.
Now, I could see them selling a enhanced GameCube or enhanced Wii game on their online service.
Sure.
Pretending Nintendo has a competent online service, which is very much in doubt.
And that's the thing, is what we was just talking about. You know, with the Wii U, there's probably going to be some gaps in the line. Like there was on Wii, there was that, you know, they blew their load big time when you had Smash Brothers, Mario Kart, Wii Fit, you know, all came out at once. The original Galaxy all came out within the space of a few months. And then they had nothing. So what do we get? You got new play control, Pikmin and Metroid Prime, all that kind of stuff. You have to sort of fill in the gaps. And so you wouldn't want to kind of take that away from yourself as an option, exactly as he points out. So, I mean, you will see, I think, enhanced version. Of course, another thing we just talked about, the HD version.
Right. Metroid Prime remake.
Wind Waker HD with better controls. Or, you know, that these are the sorts of things that they could sell to you either in on a disc or maybe, as James says, if they actually put more emphasis on the digital space as a premium downloadable game.
Yeah, I mean, you might see some, like, upscaling for the emulated, you know, games. You're playing a Wii game, maybe they can upscale it, kind of like how PS3 upscales PS2 games or PS1 games. But
I mean, even upscaled GameCube games, in many cases, look really good. Now, in some cases, they look awful.
Dude, go back and play F-Zero GX on your HD TV with component cables, and that game still holds up and is freaking amazing.
Yes.
No, Nintendo wants you to buy new stuff. That's the bottom line. I think, has it been done before? And I could be wrong, there was some GBA game or some...
So there are multiple Game Boy Color games that when you had them in the GBA, they would have extra content. But those were built with the intention of having that.
Like Zelda.
The two Zelda games on Game Boy Color, the two original Zelda games on Game Boy Color, you could access a special area if you plugged them into the GBA.
That was built with it, though. I mean, that's the difference.
Right. It was from design.
Even something like the lock-on cartridge for Sonic 3 and Knuckles... They planned that. Now, maybe they did a hack for Sonic 2 to get Knuckles in there. I'm not sure. And that was one heck of a hack. That's the sort of thing you'd be talking about doing if you're like talking about like latching onto and modifying code on a disc.
Yeah, you'd be doing some Game Genie garbage.
Probably could be done if you're booting it originally off of whatever, a hard drive, and it's a Wii U executable, but... I see no reason for Nintendo to do it. It would be a technical challenge, and if they could just rebuild it, you know, HD, add some extra content, that's what they would do.
So, I mean, are there any particular GameCube or Wii games that you'd like to see as a HD remix kind of thing go on with tablet controls or whatever? Any outstanding candidates? Because it probably will happen.
Wind Waker.
Yeah, I don't really do the tablet controls, but I'll take an HD Wind Waker.
Well, I mean, there was the Tingle Tuner, which very few people got to use, and I think it'd probably do something with the Tingle Tuner on the tablet controller.
And if you look at the inventory management of Ocarina 3D, of the 3DS, and apply that to then just, you know, on the tablet controller, again, I mean, that did smoothen the experience significantly, playing it on that, so you could apply the same thing.
But you could argue that the Skyward Sword inventory management is significantly more smooth because it's in-game.
Well, yes, but the thing is, that's a new game. I mean, with this, you're just sort of putting that pause screen onto a controller so you don't have to pause it. You know, you could easily do that within the confines of the existing game design.
I would almost guarantee that we will see a Wind Waker remake on 3DS or Wii U. I would bet it's already in development.
And the other thing as well is that having just finished Skyward Sword, we must assume that while I'm sure a Zelda for Wii U will be a priority, it is years and years away.
Oh, sure. Yep.
So if they want to get something out there in that brand early
on-ish. In the launch window, maybe?
Well, in the launch window, first year, something where an original game couldn't possibly arrive within that time frame, I think a Wind Waker HD remake would be a pretty good shout for that.
I'd like to see Mario Sunshine remade. There were some technical problems with that game in terms of frame rate and the camera controls that I think they could really clean up. And the game looked really good, but they could clean up the textures some. I think it would look really good if they remade it.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to what you said before. I think as a good candidate in terms of there's a few probably pretty simple things they could do that would actually significantly enhance it, because I'm sure it was rushed out because they needed to get their big guns out as soon as possible back in 2002.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that game. I don't think that game had camera problems. I just think people sucked.
The pachinko thing was fucked. That is inarguable.
I'm trolling.
But, those void levels, if you take, that's kind of one of the things I really like about Super Mario 3D Land is at times it's kind of like playing those void levels where you never have to worry about the camera.
Yeah.
Which is always a fantasy of mine.
I'm in the block. Great. There we go.
But you could fix it to a significant extent. It's another good choice.
I'm struggling to think of how... the problem is all we've played on Wii U, are even the most barest tech demos. So I'm really struggling with ways to apply existing games to that environment.
Well, doesn't that, though, kind of go to another part of the letter that of Tom's, in that he talks about having that as kind of a bridge between the two systems? Maybe this would encourage people to get it because it would actually enable them to get more out of something they already have. I don't think that's the way Nintendo will go by any means, as you've said. But the fact remains, I think it is a kind of tricky thing to get people, as it may be, who haven't necessarily been playing Wii games regularly and not sort of on a steady diet of gaming in general, to say, I enjoyed the Wii, I've had this, but now I really need to upgrade. The main thing is just going to have to be compelling software in and of itself. But in terms of something that tries to trade off the Wii's existing success, which of course you'd like to do because it's hugely successful. It's one of the most successful consoles ever released onto the market. You don't want to let that go to waste. You want to make that work for you as much as possible. But it's tough. Certainly just calling it Wii U is not the way to do that.
No, I do not think that, for example, my parents bought a Wii, and they bought a Wii because it was all the rage to play, Wii Sports, and that was a big deal. Nintendo needs to do something of that caliber to get those people to go back to the wall or buy it again, because right now, that Wii is sitting next to all of the other shit that they bought and used once or twice, and they just don't use it anymore. I don't see anything about the Wii U that they've shown so far that's going to get people to go back to the well again.
No, they need to provide a compelling experience that's targeted towards that demographic if they want to see them again.
Yeah, I think one of the things about the expanded audience that they succeeded with the Wii and they succeeded with the DS is that it's not so easy to sort of piggyback more success to perpetuate it. As it is with other types of gamers, I think because it's more habitual in general, it's easy to build off that and with hitting the same franchises again or with remakes or whatever. Whereas with this kind of customer, I think you've really got to earn it all over again each time.
Right.
There's no shortcut to this. They're just going to have to create something that's got that kind of really powerful immediate sort of appeal that people just even have sort of a vague notion of it will be persuaded to try it.
Right. You're not going to be able to trade off nostalgia the same way, obviously, because they don't have an emotional attachment to the brand. They just wanted the bowl in their living room.
All right. Well, James, can you read the next letter?
Ricardo from Portugal writes, "Just a few months ago, somewhere around the announcement of the Wii U, I reached a saturation point with Nintendo and their public image. The hubris in dealing with the media was something I had not felt since the first showings of the PS3, and left me tired out with a company I loved for so many years. Not seeing efforts being put forth to raise the company's online prowess in line with its competitors was no small concern either. Thankfully, the weak initial performance of the 3DS and the somewhat cold reception of the next home console seemed to be forcing the company to right some wrongs. The aggressive reduction of the 3DS's price point, the creation of the Ambassador program, all the great new functionalities introduced with new 3DS firmware, and even the recent handling of the Skyward Sword bug, releasing a program to correct my save, really give me renewed hope for the future. Does anyone else feel the same, and can we expect this trend to continue?
God, I hope so.
I don't know. I've seen Nintendo do a whole bunch of like point solutions and not...
Yeah, it's not a comprehensive reevaluation.
Ad hoc solutions, yeah. I mean, but then you could argue, you know, if you are responding to unforeseen events, then perhaps that's all you can do. But the right. question is, how much better are they going to get at anticipating problems?
Seeing the so-called unforeseen.
Yeah, getting out in front and having a coherent strategy to deal with them ahead of time.
Yeah, Nintendo traditionally has always marched to the beat of their own drum. They haven't given a shit about online. This demo thing, like, they're so late to the ballgame on so many, like, normal mainstream things. You would hope that they would get their shit together and start, you know, figuring these things out. And it seems to me, as someone who's covered Nintendo for a very, very long time, every two steps forward the company takes, they take five steps back. And there's the right thing to do and the smart thing to do, and then there's the Nintendo thing that they do. And granted, I wouldn't say biased, but like, I would say just jaded.
Yeah, I am too.
You know, I love the company, but I hate the company. And like,
it's a bad relationship at this point.
It's an ex-girlfriend that I keep going back to. And but seriously, like, I honestly think that we'll see, and I hope I'm right. I really do, that we'll see something a little different at E3, and that what we saw initially with the Wii U won't be the same. Like, I mean, they didn't, you know, it was obvious at E3, they have no idea what the hell they're doing online, or at least they weren't talking about it, but...
Well, I mean, the indications were of a sort of a laissez-faire approach.
Yeah,
basically.
Which...
That it would be open, and that different companies might have the ability to set up their own online structures within the Wii U, which, you know, it probably is not, if you're looking for that kind of strategic vision that we're talking about,
that's a bad sign.
The environment, so the rep I spoke to at their booth, the environment she was describing was awfully reminiscent of the PS2's online strategy.
Ugh. Although, I mean, look,
which
companies...
is not a compliment in the world of the current online strategies.
Yeah, but third-party publishers and whatnot, I mean, they've moved on in their online knowledge and the way they do business. So, I mean, it wouldn't literally be like that, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, but they've moved on to the point of expecting the platform to do the hard work for them. Would they really want to have to build their own platform again? They've moved on to becoming consumers.
Well, it depends. I mean, if Nintendo's essentially opening a space for them that they think maybe they could occupy and do very well in, because they could actually own that space and get other publishers to use their service, I mean, you know, maybe they would be willing to do that if it's an opportunity. And perhaps if it's not something that Nintendo is well disposed to do, maybe it would be better to get someone who actually knows what they're doing to do
it. Yeah, but have competing services on the same platform just confuses the consumer.
I think Nintendo needs to come to E3 and show people that they know what they're doing. If you leave it up to the developers, you're going to end up having the online greatness of the GameCube. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be Phantasy Star and whoever else wants to do something.
Yeah, it's self-limiting because it's just another hurdle publishers have to get over when they want to make a game online.
And the other two platforms are so advanced in what they're doing online. I'm not saying that PS3 is like the greatest thing ever, but like, at least it's something. At least it works, and there's voice chat and friends lists and all that sort of stuff. And that's what gamers expect now. And we're seeing it's a little better on 3DS, but like, there needs to be one system.
We got messaging today. 3DS is still being built.
But James, you joke about that. It's still being built. But look, Microsoft just, you know, they reinvent Xbox Live every year.
They do.
The dashboard and all that sort of stuff.
These haven't been reinventions, though. These have been just patching in features that probably should have been there to start.
Should have been there.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I think that's the issue, though, that Ricardo talks about, you know, hubris or whatever. I mean, for me, it's difficult to necessarily disentangle hubris and almost sort of desperation. I mean, the 3DS, at the end of the day, they released it when they released it because they put themselves in a box where they felt they had to make certain revenue projections. Basically because Wii sales and software sales and all that kind of stuff fell off quicker than they thought.
Right.
So they were trying to make up that shortfall by ensuring that they had a new platform ready to launch. And then they did a lot of things that, you know, you probably shouldn't have done in order to facilitate that bump. And then, of course, you know, everything, all the consequences of that that have followed. So the point is, I mean, is that hubris? Well, in a way it is, because you see, well, we could kind of half-ass this and still get away with it. But right. On the other hand, it's because they felt their backs were up against the wall in terms of their responsibility to their shareholders, and that's why they did what they did. So in terms of this trend continuing or whatever, obviously the decision to enact the price cut and all that is kind of a big turning point, because it's where they say, well, you know what, shareholders, we're sorry, but we're going to have to eat it for the time being.
Right.
You know, because this is what's needed for the long-term health of the platform and our, you know, sort of medium-term ability to generate revenue. So that is an important sort of step that they've taken. It's no small thing for them to accept taking a loss, because they've pretty much never done it while they've been in the video game business. So I do think, as we've said many times, it will definitely affect how they approach the Wii U launch.
I would hope that if they haven't already, because of recent events here with the having to build the shop from scratch for the 3DS and being lit, I would hope that they have a more integrated approach to their eShop on the Wii U and 3DS, you know, maybe a common code baseline or whatever you want to call it, so that it's really kind of two variants on the same thing. Because reinventing the wheel is one reason why they were late on the 3DS. They were doing something that they really should have already had, but they never bothered to do it.
Right. The DSi shop is a disaster.
So I would hope that whatever lessons they're learning, they're integrating into their next development in such a way that there is kind of a unified architecture, I guess, is maybe the way to put it. I don't know if Nintendo's really capable of doing that. They haven't demonstrated an ability to do that on any of the other systems, really. All the architectures for the systems up to this point have been pretty much, I'm in my world. I don't really know who you are over there, Mr. DS. I'm Wii, you know. You need to get some fresh blood implementing this stuff, outsource it if they need to, because they just don't know how to develop this sort of thing. They are not an operating system company. They are not a general electronics company. They don't know how to do this.
One thing I would say as a general point, to whatever extent there has been overconfidence, hubris, however you want to put it, complacency, I would say there is such a robust competition now, you know, in every facet of their business. You know, you've got obviously the issues of smartphones and whatnot, and they're eating away at the edges of the handheld gaming market. You've got Microsoft making very, very significant gains in that expanded audience area, you know, outside of Japan with Kinect. And even, you know, Sony has been actually second worldwide and, you know, has been sort of rolling along pretty well with the PS3 in Japan and things. So, you know, I mean, they've got a lot of competition to deal with. There's no reason why they should be so confident that they could just sort of sail along with humongous profits just by virtue of their name, which I think is perhaps some of what you know, people thought about the way they handled the 3DS with the pricing and so forth. That those market realities certainly will discipline them. And the fact now that they've taken that hit with right. The shareholders, I think now, from now on, you know, you have to say, well, the most important thing is to have the product right. And then, you know, we'll kind of, maybe we'll deal with the sort of revenue projections later. So I think that from that point of view, you've got reason for encouragement. Where you probably haven't got so much reason for encouragement is the sort of absence of a strategic competency in some of these areas where they've been deficient in the past. They still, all these things that they've done are nice, but they are one-offs.
They're reactionary.
They're, exactly. So they're, it's a completely separate issue about what we're talking about. We have a vision that you follow through from before the product comes out and then hit the ground running with it.
As a brief aside, do you remember when we were blamed for the 3DS's pricing for being too enthused at E3?
Oh, yeah.
Those were fun times.
But, you know, it's going to be fascinating, because so far they've narrowed it down. It's second half of next year. Wii U. So E3 is obviously going to be the big unveil of what sort of thing they're going to have at launch. My feeling would be that if they're going to take anything, like, just focus on the games.
Yeah.
As you know, the controllers, you know, obviously a distinguishing characteristic.
Measure up your Wii U launch game of the year.
The main thing you've got to focus on is not the functionality or any of this. Got to focus on what must-have titles they're going to have ready to go at that holiday.
Yeah, I think based on what we saw with 3DS, where they kind of started to fast track a few games they knew would really boost 3DS sales, I think they're probably doing the same thing for Wii U. They probably have some novel new stuff that's really driving what they have for their new controller. But I think they'll probably fast track the Mario team. Say, look, you got 10 months. We know that you can make a conservative Mario game that's really good in 10 months. Go.
Well, we've already seen it. It's Mario, me, and you, or whatever they're going to call it.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking of the Galaxy team, but
I mean, they just finished a game, though.
Yeah, so that's later. But that Mario game that we already saw at E3, that's what you're going to get at launch.
Yeah.
And I will totally agree with you guys. The games need to be there, but the services need to be there, too, because that's what people, when you're dropping $200 or $300 on a system, great, Netflix, okay, super. That's not enough anymore.
Right.
You need more shit. So I hope to God they're working on that. They need a complete online strategy. This is bullshit to not have voice chat anymore. And I'm not talking about the We Speak crappy speakerphone stuff. I mean, let's get with today, you know, and the future.
I would say that New Super Mario Brothers, Me, or whatever god-awful name they come up with it, if that game isn't online and that isn't the test bed for their online platform, they have already missed a vote, because that is almost certainly going to be the biggest seller of the platform launch.
I'm pretty sure Miyamoto said that wouldn't be possible to do that.
Well, didn't he say it wouldn't be possible on Wii? You know, the Wii just couldn't handle it, but it's on a new console. I mean, that's only the power of Wii U can make this possible.
I have played 2D platformers in Flash games online. It can be done.
You've only illustrated why the next console is.
Oh, so the next console's going to run on Flash. Perfect.
Oh, great.
All right, well, we'll move on to the next question there. This one is from Chirimi in Norway. So I have two questions, actually, for you guys. First, my plan is to buy a Vita when it launches on February 22nd. But as a guy that has never owned anything but Nintendo consoles, I'm not sure if there are any launch games in particular that I would enjoy. But please help me out. Any ideas, Billy? Have you got your eyes on some Vita games?
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't move and have to incur the cost of moving, I probably would have a Japanese Vita. So I love the system. I think it's great. As far as launch games for it, there's going to be a couple that I think I definitely want to play Uncharted, even though I know it's the Ben team that's working on it. I love Hot Shots. I've always been a fan of that series, so that'll be another one. And Luminous coming again, you know, I'm definitely going to be on board with that.
You're Luminous.
I love that shit. It's a great puzzle game. And I think Gravity Days, if that's a launch title, I don't know, but that was something that I saw at Tokyo Game Show that I thought was fantastic. But as I said, you know, services are also important, and they've got Twitter app, and you're going to be able to, there's just a lot of really neat stuff that they're doing with Nier and their location-based stuff, and I'm really curious to see about other stuff that's coming. And that, if you see this, once you see that screen, it's going to blow your freaking mind. I mean, it's giant OLED screen. It's gorgeous, and shit's going to look great on there. You know, I'm definitely on board. Granted, I'm going to be playing the hell out of my 3DS over Christmas break, but I am super excited to get my hands on a Vita.
As someone who is a Nintendo gamer who has bought non Nintendo consoles a few times, I will warn you, don't buy something unless they're the games there that you want. I bought a Dreamcast, and there was like one game I wanted. I regret my Dreamcast purchase because I did not have enough games. So don't do it just to do it.
A lot of the day one stuff are either series that always launch with the system.
Ridge Racer.
Which is apparently a turd.
But there's a lot of the games you expect to see on there. There's a few PS3 ports. I'm not sure you want to buy Rayman Origins on there. Or Michael Jackson, The Experience on a handheld.
No, you don't, because Rayman is single player, not multi. There's no multiplayer in it.
Oh, that's pretty bad. Even though it's not meant to be brilliant in multiplayer, that's still a pretty big compromise.
Like, Little Deviants looked interesting. as a game.
Yeah, it's cute.
I mean, it's hard to tell because a lot of these games, I mean, it's your standard launch lineup stuff.
A lot of launches are pretty unremarkable, I think. A lot of people, when they buy systems at launch, it is more for the promise of what's to come. And that would certainly be the case for me with the 3DS when I got that at launch.
But Dynasty Warriors next.
I don't know. I mean, when you're a Nintendo fan, there's a Nintendo system coming out, and you've got there are certain games you know about for a fact that have already been shown, and then there's the sort of the promise, the inevitable sort of weight of what Nintendo's going to bring to it as a first-party publisher, and then you think that especially like Japanese third parties are going to have some quality stuff to go along with it. That you feel pretty safe, even if there's not that much at launch, which there wasn't.
Right.
I enjoyed Pilot Wings, but that was it for a couple of months,
Exactly, and you look at this list, and it's pretty remarkable what they're doing for launch titles. I mean, granted, Hot Shots isn't, redefining the fucking golf universe, but...
No,
but
it's sold well enough in Japan.
I'm on it. I like that game, and it's going to be a hell of a good time on Vita.
But really, it seems like you could find something that would be quite enjoyable if you bought a Vita on day one when it comes out in February in Europe. But I think TWP's warning is well taken because it's not as much of a given that there will be a consistent stream of stuff coming down the line if you've only been a Nintendo gamer up to this point that will sort of satisfy you and that you'll buy games for it habitually. If I'd ever bought a PSP thinking that, I would have been pretty bloody disappointed. I would have been a couple of games that I would have been excited about, Gradius Collection and Ultimate Ghosts and Goblins. I would have loved those probably early on, and then I don't know what I would have bought because there's some good games on it, but not necessarily ones that ultimately kind of appeal to me. So it's obviously you can't foresee these things with great clarity or anything, but some thought about what kind of genres you think are going to be best represented when you've got Sony putting some of their internal development teams, and obviously Japan is going to have a lot of pretty big support for it because they're going to be portable games. Think about those sorts of games and whether over the life of the system you really think you'll get your money's worth, and then I think the launch takes care of itself. Probably you'll find something that you'll enjoy.
Right. I mean, there's certainly the next year's worth of games have pretty much all been announced at this point, or at least up until the E3 window have all been announced. At least you have a pretty good idea of what you're getting yourself into through E3.
All right, well, now, Chirame did have a second question. So, James, seem to enjoy Inazuma 11 a whole lot, and now that the second one is confirmed for Europe, I was just wondering if you're going to import that too.
I kind of got the game as kind of a lark. I mean, I got it because A, I played it a little bit at PAX, and B, it just seemed like such a ridiculously stupid concept that I had to give it a shot.
And C, the theme song.
Oh, good lord. Good lord, that theme song is terrible. I don't know that I'll import too. I mean, it was a fun game. I'm not sure that it was... I need to play another one right now. Kind of fun.
Yeah, that's actually some of the reason why I held off, is because I thought they might release a future one, and they are meant to be better. There's 2 and 3 on the DS, so I could think about picking that up by the time
it comes. If there's a... Keep in mind that it takes 3 weeks for me from buying this game to getting it here. So if I anticipate a hole in games, which right now I've got enough stacked up, that's not a problem. Maybe I'll take a shot on it. But for the time being, I'm not making any plans.
Fair enough. Now, it also says, Jeremy, that I appreciate all the hard work that you guys put into the show. And I'll end this email by sending you some real Viking love. I know you want it.
Oh, dear.
To which I say... The people of my country had plenty of your Viking love back in the 9th century. Rather too much of it, I would say. So, yeah, that's enough. And so that is going to do it, I think, for listener mail this week. So, James, do you want to close down the show?
Sure. So, real quick, let's give our plugs. We actually have the host of Radio Trivia on here. So, what's the status on the next episode?
Well, I recorded an episode with JP Corbin earlier this week, and I'm in the middle of editing that right now, so you can look forward to episode 102.
Awesome. We also have the weekly connectivity. I know they did a Jeopardy segment again, which are the ever popular. I don't know what the rest of their topics were. And as always, we have the website, NintendoWorldReport.com, where you can go see all of the awesome features that we usually talk about during the Now Playing segment. We did not do this week.
No Now Playing this week. Oh, it's very sad.
There are some reviews this week, and Aaron wrote impressions about a game where you're an armadillo tower defense game set in the Old West. There.
That's all true. And call RFN at NintendoWorldReport.com for emails. We've still got more to get through. I said Zelda Retro Studios. That's definitely going to happen in a forthcoming episode when Johnny comes back. And iTunes, of course. Rate and review on iTunes.
Rate our show.
We're still the UK's pace is still falling behind the US's relative to population. I'm disappointed that my countrymen are letting me down so badly. And we can always let the Vikings, you know, have their way.
No! Support your local podcast editor. Come on, people. All right, that'll do it. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week. Bye-bye.
Oh, you could have thanked your guests for turning on. Seriously.
Thanks Billy and TYP for filling in for our colleagues, and that's the show.
God.
I've not ended the show before. 103 just aborted.
It's hard.
103 literally just went, we're done!
It should have been shot to death far before that point as well.
You were there. I did not lift a finger to help. I mean, Greg freaking went Disaster Day of Crisis on us last week. I'm not sure I could do anything beyond that.
It was worth it. It was worth it. I finished that, by the way.
Oh, was the ending as chaotic?
It delivered.
Oh.
By the way, line of the game, eat my ballistics. Because me and John had the whole thing with the awful, awful Rico character in the Killzone 2 who says, eat my bullets. So when one of the enemy characters, a helicopter pilot, whipped out the eat my ballistics, I'm like,
it's even worse. I feel like that line was written by Google Translate. Someone in Japanese wrote it.
Yeah.
And that's what came back out.
The ending does manage to fit in a sort of giant mech as well.
Good. Perfect.
By the way, you know, last week when Johnny said, where's the bear come from? I figured out what mid-90s movie the bear comes from.
Which one's that?
The Edge. 1997, Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin versus a Kodiak bear.
That movie sounds like a parody.
It's actually not bad. Like, the bear action sequences are surprisingly well done. They've just got this really well-trained bear, and they, you know, obviously they cut it together quite, you know, adroitly, but it's pretty convincing. Like, normally, anything where they're supposed to be interacting with a wild animal is just terrible.
Right.
But yeah, it's the same period, so it's got to be. Like, it's just this little halo around like the years 96 to 99 that this entire game is taken from.
In some cases, the exact dialogue.
Exactly.